In this episode, neurology resident Lucas Horta interviews Dr. Shama Farooq, a neuro-oncologist. They talk on the topic of CNS lymphoma. A reminder that the purpose of this podcast is for education and not for direct medical advice. We hope you enjoy.
Hello, everyone. Today we have the great pleasure to talk to Dr. Farooq about CNS lymphoma. Dr. Farooq, welcome and thank you for joining us.
Hi, Lucas. Thank you for having me.
I think the first question would be, they probably come to you after having been diagnosed with CNS lymphoma, but initially, how do they typically present?
So first, we have to think about whether or not they have primary CNS lymphoma, or are we talking about secondary CNS lymphoma? If we're talking about primary CNS lymphoma, we're thinking about lymphoma anywhere in the central nervous system at any level. So involving peripheral nerves, spinal nerve roots, spinal canal, meninges, brain, anywhere. And patients can present acutely, and by that I mean over days to weeks, with a variety of symptoms depending on where the lesion is, right? Just like in any neuro patient that we see. And if it's secondary CNS lymphoma, you can have B symptoms with fevers, night sweats, weight loss, lymphadenopathy, lymphoma elsewhere in the body with CNS presentation.
I see. And then how do you usually start a workup?
So start with your history and exam. Try to figure out if you can localize to anything. And then you start off with your basic CBC, CMP, lactate dehydrogenase level, you know, your if they're immunocompromised, HIV status, and then followed up with imaging. So you have to get a PET full body to see if there is any lymphoma involvement anywhere in the body, CT, chest, abdomen, pelvis. For men, you have to get a testicular ultrasound and bone marrow biopsy. That's part of your entire lymphoma workup. And then specifically for the CNS workup, you look at MRI brain, a total MRI spine with and without contrast, and then an eye exam with a light exam. And then if you find anything abnormal, you have to follow that up with a lumbar puncture with all your basic studies. Well, that includes cytology and flow.
You mentioned you would image the body and then image the CNS as well with an MRI. What's the typical MRI appearance of the lesions?
So if it's in the brain, so a parenchymal brain lesion, you would look at your T1 pre and post contrast imaging and your T2 flare. So you will see on T2 flare surrounding vasogenic edema. On your T1 post contrast, you'll see a contrast enhancing lesion. In immunocompromised host, usually lymphoma will diffusion restrict homogeneously. And then lymphoma also likes to typically involve your deeper structures, the basal ganglia, corpus callosum. It can involve anywhere. It can be multifocal, but classically, you'll usually see it described that way. And then it can also have leptomeningeal spread, which can be contrast enhancing. It can involve the cranial nerves, so they can contrast enhance, or if they're infiltrated by lymphoma, they can be enlarged on imaging. They can also involve the peripheral nerves, which can also be contrast enhancing. And then also spine will show some contrast enhancement. So intramedullary or extradural lesions can contrast enhance, and you can see some surrounding edema.
And you also mentioned earlier that the eye exam is important when you're suspecting lymphoma. How often does it affect the eyes?
About 20 to 25%, it can affect the eyes. So it's always very important to do a eye exam with a slit exam as well. If the ophthalmologist does see something, they can always biopsy that area. And so that saves you from an LP. If it's positive, you can get the diagnosis more easily as well.
But then, so in that case, you would not pursue an eye biopsy or like try to sample it there if there isn't eye disease, I'm assuming.
Yes, if you don't see anything on the eye exam, then there's no involvement of the eye.
And then regarding the LP, I always hear that it's important to always have a large tap to send to flow cytometry for the diagnosis, if you're thinking of the diagnosis of lymphoma. How high yield is the LP, and how often do you clinch the diagnosis with it?
If there's leptomeningeal involvement, the yield of a positive cytology flow is higher than if there's no lepto. So the likelihood of positive CSF will be less if there's no leptomeningeal involvement. Waiting or delaying biopsy is not recommended. Or while waiting for CSF results, that's also not recommended. And so while I know historically we always say that, do three large volume taps and keep waiting for the results. Now in like higher centiles, you'll see that yes, they'll do an LP, but they usually don't wait for the results, or they usually don't wait for three taps, consecutive taps. They will go straight to the biopsy if they think there's going to be any sort of delay in patient care.
Okay. Oh, that's different than what I had previously heard. And then the other thing that always comes up when we're talking about lymphoma is the role of steroids. What's your approach to that?
If the patient comes in and you look at their image and you have this high suspicion that and concern that it's lymphoma, then you should avoid or steroids in any suspected case of lymphoma until or after confirmation of diagnosis, because it skews the diagnosis and also reduces the radiographic response by at least 50%.
Do you ever give steroids to these patients if they have lymphoma?
Yeah, because it reduces the surrounding edema and you start treatment right away as well. And so once you know that it's lymphoma, so steroids, there is a place for steroids in their treatment, but it's more for a symptomatic treatment, not for like actual tumor-directed treatment. But we do give it to them.
Yeah. And then when you are thinking about biopsying them, you could either do a biopsy or maximal resection, just like you do with other tumors. Is there a general consensus regarding which one is better?
So it's usually a biopsy. Because if you think about it, how we said earlier, usually it involves deeper structures. So doing a maximal resection for a basal ganglia or corpus callosum, it's difficult. Or if these lesions are multifocal, it's difficult and it might not be feasible. And then also there have been retrospective studies that have been done that show that there's really no improvement in clinical outcome between a biopsy and safe maximal resection. It's not, they're not like primary brain tumors, like in the, for instance, in gliomas, where safe maximal resection show better clinical outcomes or better overall survival.
Right, right. And now talking a little bit about treatment, I hear that methotrexate is the mainstay of the chemotherapy. But if you could just give us like a broad idea of how you manage these patients.
Methotrexate-based regimens are the cornerstone for both CNS lymphoma, so primary and secondary. And the goal really is induction with methotrexate-based regimens, followed by consolidation with high-dose chemotherapy, and then followed by basically getting these patients ready for stem cell transplant with the intent to cure these patients. Even if they recur, usually we like to try to rechallenge these patients with methotrexate. That and rituximab for lymphomas, it's one of our two go-to drugs.
And you mentioned relapse. So how do you usually monitor these patients?
So per NCCN guidelines, right? We always do everything by the book and by guidelines. The lymphoma has high risk of relapse and recurrence after the first 2 years of being diagnosed. And so imaging is every 3 months for the first 2 years after completion of therapy, and then every 6 months for the next 5 years, and then every year thereafter indefinitely. So if you think about it, you follow a lymphoma patient for the rest of your life, and they just come and see you without symptoms, just for a routine MRI every single year. That's the protocol that's in place, because the fear of them relapsing. So I have seen patients in clinic that will be, you know, their eighth year out from treatment. And it's literally a hi, bye, how's your life been going in the last, you know, year? So they're great patients to have in that sense. In urology, not a lot of patients give you hope in some fields. These patients do, right? You see them, they've had this grueling cancer. They've been through the ringer. I mean, especially the ones that any one of them, but the ones that undergo stem cell transplant, they will tell you that it was the worst part of their life. They thought they were going to die during that time because it's just an absolutely grueling process. And then you see them on the other side years later, and it's just amazing. Or even a year later when you see them, they're in complete remission. They're doing great. They're back to their regular lives.
That's incredible. I was not expecting that. And I don't mean to finish on a sad note, but on the off chance they do relapse, do you approach it similarly treatment-wise, or is it a different management?
So when they first get diagnosed with CNS lymphoma, you have clear-cut standard of care, like treatment protocols. In relapse, you don't really have standard protocols. But you do have a lot of options. So one of the options is, you know, these newer drugs available like ibrutinib, which is a tyrosine kinase inhibitor. And it's an oral agent that they take every day. You can rechallenge, like I said, with methotrexate. You have other medications like lenalidomide, and there's a variety of other ones that you can do, and other different types of like combination regimens. And then you also have some whole brain RT. It's not something we do upfront for patients. Usually, like I said, rechallenge methotrexate, get them into maybe a clinical trial, try other regimens, combine other regimens together. But they do have that option as well, radiation therapy.
Dr. Farouk, thank you so much for joining us. I learned a lot. I'm sure our audience did it as well. Today was great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.